Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Josh Brown, are games finally coming back?
I don't know, man. Like, yes and no. I've played a lot of games over the long weekend that we've had, but are they coming back? Most games seem to be getting delayed, Scott Tilford. I'm not sure.
We're going to get into the various bits of news that are doing the rounds. There's a whole thing about the combined showcase that's coming from Disney and Marvel, and we're going to talk about all the games, or some of the games that might be there, some of the stuff that has been pushed back, the likes of Marvel's Midnight Suns. I mentioned games returning, though, because it is 3 hours and 49 minutes and counting until Rollerdrome is here.
That's right.
I'm going to love that game.
You are. I mean,
Tony Hawk's with a shotgun.
You've been away, and I imagine not played much while you were away. Because, I mean, you're in Amsterdam. What else are you going to be doing?
Well,
but now, like you said, games are back. And I know that if the PlayStation 5 was set up downstairs, I imagine you would have even played that game at lunch if you could.
Oh, I'll tell you what, that's a beautiful fang.
It is.
The PS5 is set up downstairs, but I don't think I want to buy Rollerdrome on a work account and then have to buy it again when I get home. Overall, though, we'll dive... I didn't even say what the show was. It's The Wind-Up. I'm Scott Tilford. You're Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott Tilford.
Where we get through whatever's going on in the industry, news, talking points, whatever games we're playing, etc.
Please be kind with us. We have had like 4 or 5 days off, and it feels like a genuine lifetime.
Oh,
I came
God.
In the office this morning and saw Scott Tilford, and it felt like I've not seen you in a year. We had another lockdown or something.
We had a whole thing where our parent company was like, you guys need 4 days off. Everyone who's under this banner of this umbrella, future owners and whatever else. Words are hard, Josh Brown, when you've been in Amsterdam for 4 days. But they were like, take some time off. So I was like, I'm going to go to Amsterdam, and a beautiful city. Massive shout out to Amsterdam. It's absolutely stellar, possibly a utopia. Couldn't get enough of it. But in terms of stuff that we've been playing, I've not been playing anything. You've been playing Lego Star Wars.
Well, tragically, my friend, like you said, we had the long weekend and it was a heat wave in Britain, but I couldn't take advantage of that because unfortunately my girlfriend got COVID, so we were isolating over the weekend, so I missed the whole thing and decided, you know what, if I'm going to have to stay in, I'm going to play all the games I can get my hands on. And one of those was Lego Star Wars.
Games.
We thought, if we're going to have to stay in, you know, I'm sick of watching movies, sick of watching television, we've done too much of that. Let's get a game that we can both play, and Lego Star Wars was the one. Now, we have talked about Lego Star Wars before because I know that James Dowse really wasn't a fan.
He was so disappointed by it.
And James Dowse's disappointment is why he ended up on my most disappointing games of the year so far list.
Yes.
Because that is kind of like an amalgamation of thoughts within the office. And I thought James Dowse was so disappointed, we'll throw that on there. Mm-hmm. And I've got to say, so far, a couple hours in, I'm kind of agreeing with the man.
Like, oh, I thought you were going to say he's completely wrong and
no,
I'm loving it.
Sadly not. Like, from a presentational standpoint, I think the game is impeccable. You know, playing it on PlayStation 4, I forgot how good these games look and how good they
shiny bricks
fail. Very shiny bricks, very detailed environments. However, just like the gameplay itself, even playing it, you know, with my partner, you know, two player, that should be more fun. But the co-op in this game just kind of like breaks it, like literally breaks it. And that's the most disappointing thing. Like, the game hard crashes so much, which is so frustrating.
And on PS5.
On PS5 as well. And I just can't feel like I can get in the flow of it. You have to hit like 3 loading screens before you can even jump into a level.
Yep.
For me, any Lego game should have a pick up and play feel to it. And this is throwing up so many roadblocks at me. That just makes it kind of, I don't really want to go back to it because I know I'm going to have to sit through a lot of bugs and a lot of hard crashes where they shouldn't be there.
That's weird that you have so much performance stuff. I didn't have performance issues with it, but I was quite bummed out by it. This is a weird thing because I loved going into this. I love that they were actually making more styles of game. Like if you play as Poe, you play as a shooter, you get like a Gears of War style cover shooter.
Yeah.
If you play as like a Jedi, then you get an Arkham style combat model. And I'm like, that's cool. That's kind of, I thought that's what this franchise needed. However, it's like a Playmobil version of that, or like a super early learning version of that, where it's not really that engaging. Like if you take those game mechanics, but you don't have the pace, the tactility of them or whatever, it's just quite boring. It's like playing a really boring version of all those like frameworks that you already know and have played thousands of hours of already. So like I weirdly bounced off it, where I was just like, oh, this is so cool in theory and I'm loving, oh, and take cover and do this, but it's like automatic headshots and like, you know, you're just automatically taking on a bunch of dudes. And I was like, I get this for a 3-year-old, obviously that's who it's made for.
Yes.
But at the same time, the other games, like you said, had a pick up and play mentality where they were almost more like brawlers, where you could sort of just drop in, hammer a few buttons, do some moves, deflect a blaster ball. Whereas here they kind of try and walk the line and they do it, it ends up quite boring.
That's it. It's all very impressive on paper for the reasons you've just mentioned. I do like that they've tried to add in so much different gameplay variety in there, so many different scenarios. However, yeah, for me, it just doesn't quite cohere into something as engaging as something like Lego Marvel Super Heroes, which I played in like 2013 or 2014. And I think that was more of a Lego game of my style, because in that game, you have like the big open world that you can explore that's full of secrets and full of like puzzles and whatnot and characters to find, and then you have the dedicated levels, whereas this game, from what I've played so far, almost tries to split the difference. You have the dedicated levels that still have some secrets in, and then you have kind of like more open environments that you can explore and kind of scratch that semi-open world itch. And that semi-open world itch is, in two-player especially, man, like, it's just a nightmare to navigate when you've got the split screen. Maybe I would enjoy that stuff more if I was playing solo.
You can...
No shade to my partner, but, you know, it kind of is what it is. Get frustrated.
I like that dynamic split screen thing, but you can make it, like, lock to split screen the whole time. Or, like, I like the idea of we're sharing the same screen.
Yeah.
But then like, it's just weird. Sometimes it feels like you're out the radius and then all of a sudden there's a line, a diagonal line that's moving with you to, like, split the feed.
Well, this is the thing, right? The split screen, at least the version of split screen, there may be more options that I'm playing here, is literally just a straight line, and that's good because the levels are so open that you don't want to be teleporting back to your co-op partner over and over again. So it does mean in those open spaces you get to both split off and do separate side missions or do separate puzzles and secrets and stuff. And that's kind of like, again, interesting on paper, and it probably would be miles better if you were playing online. But as a split screen kind of co-op game, it's more obtuse than I think it needs to be. And I want to play more because, you know, I love Star Wars and I do, like I said, like the presentation, the missions and the writing is all solid. And I want to get to The Phantom Menace because I started at A New Hope.
I was going to ask, where did you start?
A New Hope. I went like, we'll do it movie releases rather than chronological, because I kind of want to build up to Phantom Menace especially, because I think first, no, you know, not good as Phantom Menace might be as a movie, it always makes for great games,
man.
Like Jedi Power Battles, the Phantom Menace game, all the Lego Star Wars titles, they're all good, you know?
Jedi Starfighter, massive shout out. I think, that prequel trilogy has always been stellar in video game form. I have a whole thing about how I think Star Wars is better played than watched anyway.
Yeah.
Not necessarily for the original trilogy, but when I jumped into this, I went to the new movies, the new the sequel trilogy, whatever the hell they're calling it, because they never got games. So I was just like, I know The Force Awakens did.
Yeah.
But there's no such thing as like Lego Last Jedi. There's, you know, Lego Rise of Skywalker. So like, I was like, I want to see what these levels feel like and see if I have more of a connection to it when I'm playing it than I did in the movies. Not really.
Right.
But that's more, again, like reliant on the mechanics that we just described being quite boring, like ultimately. Even though it's cool seeing like Lego old Luke or whatever, throwing the lightsaber away and stuff. But
I do think the Jedi gameplay is compelling, you know, like the lightsaber combat is fun, the force powers is cool, you know, picking up an explosive barrel and launching that, it feels way more fun than I thought it would, but it's so good that it makes me not want to play as like Han Solo. I certainly don't want to play as C-3PO, get that dweeb out
of
my
face. No one ever
wanted
to play as him, though.
No, or even R2, you know, and that's like kind of sacrilege. I like R2, but he just kind of headbutts things in this game, and that's fun to watch once, but not fun to play. I'm rambling now. I'm being nitpicky, but you know what I mean.
You've played a Lego Star Wars game, considering we grew, it's what, 20 years of them at this point?
Yeah,
like,
man.
It's a long time. And like, they had a hell of a template that a lot of different people tried to follow. And a lot of different genres got applied, or different IP got applied to that template. So for them to overhaul it and the reception to be like, yeah, it's all right. Like, you didn't really see much response to it.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether that's where Star Wars is an IP. I don't know if that's where Lego Star Wars is as well, because we've had so many repackaged versions of this. I have a hunch that people didn't really know what this was, where it feels like every other Lego Star Wars game re-released again, as a, because we already had that. We got like the whole, I think it's called the Skywalker Saga. I forget what the initial one was called. This one's the Skywalker Saga.
Yeah.
But the other one was the Skywalker Saga too. It's just that we didn't call it that. But that was like six games in one, and now this is the same. Well, it's not even the same six games.
No.
The same six stories plus three more with new mechanics and stuff. I feel like somewhere in there, there was a marketing spin that wasn't really done, didn't really do it justice. The other thing that you've been playing, or one of the other things that you've been playing, is As Dusk Falls, which is the sort of narrative adventure, conversation-driven mystery game?
Kind of. Well, I mentioned this on the last wind-up when I just started it a couple hours in, and I wasn't sure, you know, I was enjoying it for the kind of like story, but I was like, is the story too pulpy? Mm. Is it too, I think I used the phrase EastEnders-like, which is my new video game genre now.
Yeah, we said that should be, like, there should be a soap opera game. Why is there not a Neighbours game or a Coronation Street game?
Yeah. But this, the more I play it, man, the more like in love I am with it. I genuinely think it's really good. I know it's got a lot of middling reviews, but if you can not get over the art style, but get with the
art
style.
That's the biggest barrier for
100%.
Sure, yeah.
And I do think, even if you think you might not enjoy it, give it half an hour or something and you kind of forget that you're just watching kind of like still photographs a lot of the time, because there's a lot of emotion behind it in like some of the twists and turns this story takes is so good. I'm loving the characters and the way that I'm hating some of the characters just outright.
Right.
They're all like really, they're well written. Like they have enough depth and complexity to them and their relationships that it's really fun to kind of, you know, watch them navigate the situation and potentially get in perilous, life-threatening situations. Okay. And as a player, try to get them out of that. Like, it just keeps going and going, and with every ratchet attention, I'm like, this is good. It's got a lot of dumb things in. I'm not saying it's like a high prestige TV, like the marketing is calling it. Don't expect writing of that caliber, but expect fun, entertaining writing. Expect good performances. And I think you'd have a good time with it, man. I would really love to see what you thought of it.
I've got it downloaded because it's on Game Pass. Because where we left you story-wise, not to do spoilers, but you were like you have this whole family dynamic. You're playing as the different family members, and then it was like there was a biker gang, and they've just robbed a place, and then you all end up at the same motel.
Yes.
And it was like crossing over between the criminals and you guys, and who's going to survive and who's going to find out different pieces of information about their various histories and stuff. Has more happened setting-wise, or is it still like one big location where it's more character-driven, but it's in one particular place? Or would that be a spoiler?
That might be a spoiler. Ooh. Because the game is split up into different, like, kind of chapters, which are kind of like the equivalent of seasons of TV, perhaps, if that makes sense. And each one kind of, like, ends on maybe, like, a cliffhanger, and then you'll pick up with the next episode. Mm-hmm. What I will say is that it's definitely not just a one-location thing, because you also get flashbacks as well. Mm. And there are a lot of flashbacks kind of, like, going into the histories of these characters and why they're in this situation and why they're behaving the way that they are, that are quite expansive. So yeah, it's like the scope of it is much bigger than just kind of like the standoff at this motel. It just keeps escalating in tension, and kind of the set pieces keep getting bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. And I'm all for that, man. Like some of the near-death experiences that these characters have had in my playthrough have been so like nerve-wracking to kind of play out, because I really care for them. Even the ones that I think are bastards, I like care about them in this situation, and you don't necessarily want them to meet the fates that they could meet. And the way that it branches has been really fascinating. I've just, man, like I didn't expect to love it this much, but I'm every time I play it, I just think this is great. It'll be on my top 10 of the year so easily.
Is it better than The Quarry?
You know what? It is. The Quarry is a personal favorite because it's horror, in the way it plays with horror tropes is great. But like kind of as a tight, engaging story, this one might be better.
Ooh,
like it has more interesting consequences. Uh-huh. I feel it has more complex characters. And it's just kind of something that you don't necessarily see in this subgenre of kind of narrative-driven games, like the idea of a heist gone wrong and you're, you know, navigating this hostage situation in such a kind of tight, confined space. I think that is what differentiates it. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm interested to see, if you play it, for instance, who you like, who you don't like, what decisions you make, who you save, who you don't, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. I do want to check it out. I'm curious how long it is. I think you said it was, you're still going with it. So it's like, it's at least 4, 5, 6 hours.
Oh, totally. Like it's 6 hours at minimum, I would say. 6 to 8, I would say. Because
I want to dive into Cult of the Lamb. Like that was the one, the biggest thing that I missed across the weekend. And there's something else that's I've been playing, which I can say I'm playing Saints Row. Right. And we'll have more to say in the coming weeks and everything. That game's out next week anyway. So there's that stuff that we can dive in, which we will do next week. But yeah, like, I feel like there's like, in amongst that, I would like to squeeze in As Dusk Falls, but I'm just like, Cult of the Lamb feels like the next Stardew in terms of like how much you can just live on that thing. The only thing pushing that away from me is the Switch performance. Apparently it plays like hell on the Switch, so I'm kind of waiting for a stable frame rate, but I want Cult of the Lamb in my life. And then Saints Row and stuff. The final thing to mention in terms of playing stuff is that you're closing the loop on the Dark Souls run. Now, you previously started with Dark Souls 2, I think.
I did. After Elden Ring. Yeah.
That's what it was. Elden Ring started you off, and then you did Dark Souls 2, and then what order have you done them since then? You did a whole bunch of FromSoft stuff.
I did a bunch of FromSoft stuff. So I did Elden Ring, I did Dark Souls 2, like you said, and then I did Dark Souls 3, and I thought that would have closed the loop, but then I still wanted more, so I did Bloodborne, and I thought that would close the loop, and then I did Sekiro, and then I was like, right, I'm totally done now. Like, I don't need to play Dark Souls 1. I've played that so much. Demon's Souls, obviously played that when the PlayStation 5 came out. But then, like I said, I was in over the weekend, had nothing to do, and I just thought, what?
New games, who needs?
But what better way to distract my mind than to jump into Demon's Souls? And I thought Demon's Souls on PlayStation 5 would take me through for the whole week. And then it got to Friday when I was off, and I played 11 hours of it in a day. And I thought, well, I've nearly finished it now. And I woke up the next day and finished that off, and I thought, well, it kind of seems dumb to play every From Software game again, except Dark Souls. So I thought, why not play Dark Souls again? And then I jumped back into Dark Souls. And you know what? I almost quit. I almost thought, I don't want to do this.
Really?
So I was approaching it with the wrong mentality. I was a little bit annoyed at the fact that I was in on that Saturday night and, you know, I'd missed all of this stuff. And more I was kind fair. Of like, I just kind of wanted to brute force through something just to take my mind off it. Mm-hmm. And that's not the way you should play any Dark Souls game, no matter how well equipped you may be. And I kept getting hammered by these poison rats, and I thought, I can't be bothered with this anymore. But then I woke up the next day with the itch, and I was like, oh no, I want to play more Dark Souls. So I went back to that, played it for like 9 hours that day, played it for like another 6 hours yesterday, and now at the current point I've got the Lord Vessel, I've just done the New Londor Ruins area, beat the Four Kings, and I've got like 3 main areas to go because I've done Ash Lake and all of the other optional parts that I can do, and I don't know if I'll ever play another game again.
Well, is your game of the year 2022 list just going to be all of the From Software games in whatever revised order you've now got with all this new experience?
Well, because I don't think you'll let me do that, I'll definitely put them all on the honorable mentions list somehow.
If you can have that, I can have Assassin's Creed Odyssey, because both these things are such a testament to how little is going on and has been going on since Elden Ring for the most part, that we've all been able to get lost in these massive games.
Let me throw something your way, because over the weekend,
curveball me, baby.
I was going to get Lost Judgment. That's what I was going to play.
Why didn't you get Lost Judgment?
Oh, a mixture of things, man. Like, I'll tell you why. Because I've got no money at the moment. I'm pretty broke because at the weekend, I ended up buying a Leeds Festival weekend ticket.
You did.
I was supposed to be going just for the Friday, and then the opportunity arose to get the full weekend ticket, and that was like a couple of £100. And I thought, well, I can't spend a couple of £100 on these tickets and then also buy a game. So I thought, Dark Souls it is.
I mean, I can't. You dangle such beautiful things in front of me, Josh Brown.
In front of myself as well.
I know, and I'm just, the idea of you playing Lost Judgment, the conversations we could have had. You should play one of the Yakuza games, because they're all on PlayStation Plus now.
Yes, I know.
I don't know, people say you should start with Zero. I kind of want you to just start with Kiwami 1.
Well, I spoke to you off camera last week about wanting to play those Yakuza games, Yakuza games, and the reason I didn't was because they weren't on PlayStation Plus yet, and you were like, Josh, just play them on Game Pass. And I was saying, but I want the trophies.
You do.
And it's because there was a gap in them coming on PlayStation Plus that I ended up going back to Demon's Souls. Otherwise, there's a whole other, you know, speaking of as Dusk Falls style branching pathways, there's a whole other branching pathway of my life where I've been playing Yakuza for the past week. But unfortunately, the PlayStation Plus rollout was a week too late for me.
It's sure. Well, now that you've done your From Software thing, you're closing the loop. You're wide open to try one of the Yakuza games and get on board with the new taste sensation.
But like you've said,
go on.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
Why,
Hal?
Because you're going to play Saints Row.
Yeah, exactly. Because you, like you said, games are starting again. So we've got Saints Row, we've got The Last of Us Part One.
Roll the drone, baby.
Roll the drone. We've got new games now. So this was the window to play something old, and unfortunately, I decided to close the loop.
Okay, if this time next year, when things are flat again in the middle of the year, that's.
Oh, 2023 is never getting flat with the amount of games that are coming out.
You're not wrong. That year is ludicrous right now. It's ludicrously packed. But yeah, so that's what we've been playing at the minute. I'm going to dive back in next week or whenever I'm allowed to talk about things, they'll be talked about. But let's talk about some new stuff. So there's a new Lord of the Rings game coming from Private Division. Apparently, in the way they tweeted this out, they've apparently managed to get something licensed from the Tolkien estate or whatever else. And they're working with Weta Workshop, which are the special effects studio and the people who helped with the original Lord of the Rings trilogy. I said that really fast there.
You did.
They're the original studio that helped work with the Lord of the Rings trilogy. But everything is just open on the table. The only other Lord of the Rings thing in the near vicinity is Lord of the Rings Gollum, which I'm sorry, looks horrible.
Nah, man, Gollum.
Go on.
Like I just said, there's so many good games coming out in 2023, but Gollum, the Lord of the Rings Gollum, is going to be Game of the Year 2023. Can this new Lord of the Rings game compete? The answer is no. The answer is hell no.
Do you think that we're going to be returning to a time in gaming history where each individual character got their own story, like the Aragorn game?
I thought
people played, which I thought was fun, but I didn't like the art style at all. I was a big fan of the EA Lord of the Rings stuff instead.
I think they will do. I think it'll be based on the new Amazon show rather than the books or any of the movies or anything like that. Because
doesn't excite me at all.
Hey, no. I think that actually started to look a little bit better, man.
For the Lord of the Rings show?
Yeah, the last trailer did something for me.
Oh, nah. That's when we were watching the Halo trailers and you were like, no one is there.
Right.
No one is there at all. That's CG. That doesn't look believable at all. That's where I'm at with Lord of the Rings. You contrast that with how Prey looks.
Right.
I know there's like some dodgy CG in Prey, but whatever. But those people look like they are living lives in that location.
It's true.
Rings of Power just looks like Soundstage, the TV show. Like, nah, man. Oh, God, I'm in F that show territory.
Well, tell me then, what? Because I've spoken far too much on this podcast so far. What do you want to see out of this potential Lord of the Rings game? You know, like the entire series is your canvas. You can go back in time. You can go for the movies. You can go for Rings of Power, which is even further back in time. But, you know, what do you want to see?
Well, the thing is, I don't have any remote positivity towards that show. I don't like the way it's been handled. I think it looks terrible. It just feels like it's just overmade. It's like you throw an Amazon budget at something. So we need to make this work, and we need to chase Game of Thrones. That's why it's called Rings of Power, and let's do all this stuff. And I just don't buy it. I don't think it looks like it has a soul. But it might be like the Star Wars thing where it's more fun to play. So I don't know what stories are in Rings of Power yet. I've not read the Silmarillion or the older stuff, nor have I read any Lord of the Rings, but I don't know the old stuff far less.
Yeah.
So I'm not that sure what you do with that. I'm sure that book readers would be like, oh, there's a million stories that are yet to be told or whatever. I just love that world. I want it to feel like those movies did. And I know that Peter Jackson kind of has the monopoly on how Lord of the Rings feels, because it's quite close to how the books feel, I'm reliably told. And so I think that that's one of the biggest issues with the new show is that it doesn't feel like the books did or it doesn't feel like the old movies did.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they can just make games that feel like the old stuff. I wonder how much Lord of the Rings as an IP, like you said, is torn between what we knew and what we're going into and whether generationally, if there are people who don't even have that connection to the old games and can just go into the new stuff and be like, oh, this feels bigger and more glitzy and it's great. Yeah. Whereas that makes me run the other way. Like the thing is, like, you read about the people who, you know, in the original Lord of the Rings trilogy, who literally made the chainmail and they lost their fingerprints because they had to wind this stuff for so long, and it's ludicrous. But at the same time, it's not necessarily forgiving that stuff. I'm sure they were happy enough doing it. But you can see it on the screen, and like in a way that it imbued the IP at the time with such a soul and a heart and a charm.
Yeah.
There's a reason that my wedding was themed around Lord of the Rings. And so I don't feel that in the Lord of the Rings IP anymore. And I'm curious what they do, and I hope it's not just a box ticky thing.
Yeah.
I just want anything that rekindles the Lord of the Rings passion, really, because the show is not doing that for me.
What do you think this means for the Middle-earth Shadow of series because we've had obviously Shadow of Mordor, Shadow of War, but we've not heard anything from that franchise for like 5 years now. And
no.
The studio, if I recall correctly, is making the Wonder Woman game.
Yep.
So I imagine they're too busy. Like, are we ever going to see a sequel to that, or have we moved on and are we just going to see Gollum and whatever this is and other Middle Earth games kind of take its place?
I wonder what they do with that stuff, because like you said, Monolith are making the Wonder Woman game, and I have to assume that the Lasso of Truth is their version of Kara Brimbor's hand on the face.
Yes.
Like the Nemesis system, where if people don't know, the Nemesis system in the Shadow games was just you were recruiting NPCs, recruiting enemies to your side and making your army. And you could view it all on like a main menu and assign different things and different like people to fight and that kind of stuff. And they blew that way out in Shadow of War. Like it was incredible in Shadow of War. It was just buried under all the microtransactions.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But the amount of permutations that system could have were really, really cool. And that's what I assume that they're doing with Wonder Woman. But I think that that Nemesis system is so intrinsically tied to the, Middle Earth Shadow of or Shadow of War or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't think you do one of them without Monolith. And I think because of how weirdly received War was, you kind of can't do it anymore. So I think the Nemesis system will remind people how awesome that stuff is in Wonder Woman. And then they'll do more of that stuff. But I think that IP, that franchise, that little sliver of franchise, I think is dead. I mean, they broke the canon anyway, like in Shadow of War.
Yeah.
And they did all the stuff with Isildur and they changed like how that stuff comes together. And everyone was way too overpowered. And it's just, yeah, it's like Force Unleashed 2 when they were like, what if Starkiller killed everyone? And it's just like, you've broken the canon now. So yeah.
It also gave us stupid sexy She-Lob as well.
I forgot about stupid sexy She-Lob.
I'm sure they want you to forget about it as well.
Yeah, that whole direction of that game was like, what are you guys doing? But that's kind of why I mentioned this. Oh, we had this down as a news item, because as much as I can go, I'm not a big fan of how the Amazon show looks. I'm still going to check it out. I'll do at least the pilot. I hope it pulls through. And I like the idea of like a young Galadriel. I like the idea of the subject matter. I just don't like the execution of it.
Right.
So I didn't like the Witcher show. It just felt like a bunch of people in a field as opposed to a bunch of people in cosplay in a field, not actually there, which was the problem with the Hobbit movies had, because they shot them in a different frame rate and it was lit wrong. Like it's just, I've got a whole thing. Just watch Prey. It just needs to be like Prey. And so like, it just needs to be believable. But yeah, Lord of the Rings for me, it's down as a news item because I don't know where they go. Like, I feel like it was such a specific period in the early 2000s. And I know obviously the books predate that so much, but do you want anything from Lord of the Rings? Like, I wasn't actively thinking of, oh my God, can I get some more Lord of the Rings, please? It was more like an immaculate set of films.
Totally.
That was brilliant. I despised The Hobbit, so I was long gone anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was a huge fan of the original Lord of the Rings trilogy, like the Peter Jackson movies. I went to see The Hobbit, Journey Begins, or whatever the first one was called, like opening weekend.
Same, yeah.
And then I never watched the other two movies because I was like, I just don't.
You've never seen the other ones?
Never saw them.
They're horrendous.
So this is it, man. I was like, I saw the writing on the wall with the first one and I've always wanted to go back and do them, but they're just too long and I'm like, they're not what I really want out of Lord of the Rings, like you mentioned.
They are to me, or to an entire generation, what the Star Wars prequels were to those people who were taking the original movies more seriously or whatever, but the Hobbit movies are abysmal.
Well, this is it. This is why I've not gone back to it, surprisingly. But with that said, I do think the Middle Earth kind of like franchise as a whole does have a lot of fertile ground, you know? Like, people are obviously spending a lot of money on it, and like the Amazon show costs a lot, and while you might argue that that makes it overproduced, it's still interesting to see someone go all in on it. I think if that show fails, that will be kind of like me done, but you know, for me, I love those first three movies so much, and you know, yeah, The Hobbit might have been a misfire, but there's still potential to do something. I think if you fail twice with the TV show and The Hobbit, then it's kind of like, okay, let this rest for a little bit. But if that's kind of like, you know, interesting and successful, and then these games are interesting and also successful, then I'm kind of in the same way that I'm in with Star Wars, where it's like, I won't watch everything, but the stuff I will watch, I will be very invested in.
Yeah, that's fair. I think you mentioned before, like, what kind of stuff do I want to see? And my mind immediately went to the Third Age, the game, which was the turn-based one.
Yeah.
And I discarded that to talk about stuff, because I was like, they're not going to do that again. Then you're not going to get a really deluxe, like, produced turn-based Lord of the Rings game. Maybe eventually. But yeah, I like that. I know that every character in there was sort of just a cipher for Aragorn, Gimli, whatever. But it had enough of like a side story vibe where it's like, while all the main stuff was going on, this was happening. And I quite like that.
Yeah.
The Enter the Matrix approach. And he sort of like intersected that way. Maybe you pick some characters from the original, well, I guess from the Lord of the Rings, the TV show, if that is what they're doing, and then flesh those things out. Or you do stuff around the outside of the Fellowship.
Listen, this is because I want to see this sickness continue. But I want to see a Middle Earth game that just rips off Dark Souls, my friend. Because I think you could do it. You've got like the combat there, you've got the setting, you've got
set
like,
it in the minds of Moria, and you've got a dungeon.
There you go, you've got the potential for interconnected levels. Like, if they're gonna like do a Jedi Fallen Order where you kind of rip off Dark Souls a little bit, but then also have like action adventure combat and areas on top of that, I would like to see that.
My default brainstem cellular reaction is that I don't want more Souls combat and stuff.
Right.
Unless you do something really meaningful with it. But as you described that, my mind, like, I did visualize the minds of Moria and like, you know, battling your way through, and you're up against all the goblins and everything.
Exactly. Imagine like you battle all the way through, you get to the Balrog or whatever, and that's like your flame lurker style boss. My only references are Souls games at the moment, so I'm so sorry for this. It will end at one point, but I do think that could be genuinely cool.
No, totally. And if there's one thing that is sure to work, like, I mean, and you've already got so many like tangential relationship stuff in terms of you know, George R.R. Martin being a huge fan of Tolkien stuff, and then helping out with Elden Ring and whatever. So it's like, you've already got the groundwork is kind of there for what a Lord of the Rings Souls game would be.
I'm not saying like this is one for one. I'm not saying like the Souls games ripped off Lord of the Rings or anything like that.
No.
But it's kind of like, you know, when you get a lot of games that are inspired by the movie Aliens.
Yes.
And then it's like, or Indiana Jones to Uncharted. And it's like, you could do such a good one of those by going back to a licensed IP like Aliens, like an Indiana Jones, because the framework is there. I think you could do a Lord of the Rings game in the style of Dark Souls, because you've got the framework and it fits so well to the world that you have. Maybe it's too close.
I tell you what I would really want is actually, like, if they could nail it, like the whimsical side of Lord of the Rings, because we never do it anymore. We always do mature stuff, and it's more like, like it's like muted color palettes and everything sucks and like whatever. If you did like a really cutesy, whimsical, I'm loving living in the Shire and I need to go, just the definitive Lord of the Rings story, but you could kind of play as Frodo, but I guess you'd have to get used to like the combat side of it, and then you do your Soulsian level where they're like descending into Moria and they don't know if they're going to survive, and you're fighting the cave troll and it's like really intense, but it's juxtaposed against how beautiful that opening is. Kind of just like the arc the movies go on, but playing it, like being in the Shire, talking to people and whatever else. Like, I don't know, I wonder if the thing that, I mean, I don't think this will be what this is, because like you said, it makes more sense to tie into the Rings of Power stuff, and they're clearly aiming to make that the next 20 years of Lord of the Rings.
But
I just think that like the juxtaposition is why like the hobbits fight anyway, so I'm like, oh, like Frodo goes out and does his thing, and maybe you need to nail that rather than like dungeon crawler with a Lord of the Rings skin.
I think that's why I'm genuinely quite excited for potential new Lord of the Rings games, because like you said there, you know, this world is so malleable. You can do something dark and gritty like the Middle-earth Shadow of games, or you could do something like you said, lighter, more kind of, you know, children's fantasy like The Hobbit, with a video game. You could do something like The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, where you've got a proper RPG set in this world and you're just somebody like going around the different locations, the different cities and whatnot, and make it like a proper like RPG essentially.
Do you know what game nailed this whole thing we're describing? I remember thinking this as I played through it. Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons.
Ah,
Brothers is the perfect Tolkien game, and it's like it just is. Like for me, it is. Like you've got the two, like it's the whole monomyth thing. You've got the whole thing of like the two brothers. They need to try and get this antidote for their father who's dying, but they're from a humble little village, and they go on a grand adventure. And like you can smash cut through all that games. I'm not gonna do all the spoilers, but like you know, like they're just like two brothers trying to get like come out of the village, and all of a sudden they're flying with an owl, and they're doing all this stuff in the air, and they're going to these meeting giants, and that's a full on BFG old school fairy tale Tolkien style story. And yeah, I just, that's kind of what I would want if you nail both sides of it. Like I really cared about those brothers going on that journey because I was with them at the start. And something like that. Next news item down though is the Disney and Marvel live stream, which is happening because they've got D23. There's a, I think that's every year they do the Disney Expo thing. Mm-hmm. Between September 9th and the 11th, and the Disney and Marvel stream is apparently on the 9th, where they're showing off a whole bunch of stuff in regards to the future Marvel games that are coming. So one thing that's rumored is a Fantastic Four game written by Amy Hennig, no less. This is from Skydance. It's described as a Marvel ensemble game. And like I said, the rumored part of it is the Fantastic Four part. But the game is written by Amy Hennig, which knocked my head off because her name is very much attached to Forspoken. Like all that marketing stuff is rolling out for the rest of this year. That game's a whole other thing. But yeah, this other game though, where she sort of settled, like we were talking before recording that assumedly Hennig and Gary Widder and Todd Stashwick and the people that helped out on Forspoken was more like a contract job. Whereas I remember seeing the reports that Skydance is where Amy Hennig is, like that's where she's like settled and that she's like put more, that is like her homegrown game kind of thing. But still, this Fantastic Four game is described as a narrative-driven blockbuster action adventure about humanity, complexity, and humor.
Dude, man,
it's
like,
Uncharted. Carry on.
This is the thing, right? I've lived so many lives at this point, and I've seen so many press releases about a new Amy Hennig game that is
so
a narrative-driven action adventure game.
Yeah.
And I just want one to finally like happen because it sucks that you know, obviously, she was originally doing Uncharted 4, that ended up being Bruce Straley and Neil Druckmann, and she went on to make the Star Wars Ragtag game, then that was cancelled by EA, and just all of these kind of things have been happening. So hopefully, like, this is the thing that sticks. And you know, to me, a kind of Marvel ensemble superhero game, one that's narrative driven, is kind of like all that Disney is greenlaying at the moment outside of Spider-Man. You know, we had the Avengers, we had Guardians of the Galaxy, we've got
Ultimate Alliance 3,
Ultimate Alliance 3, even another game that I'm blanking on right now, Midnight Suns. You know, that's like an ensemble of characters. Obviously, it's not the same type of gameplay as what this will be, but it's
we've
like
they're
focusing.
Like Wolverine.
That's true.
And more few and far between, though. There's way more exposure on the group stuff,
Yeah, it's almost like Insomniac are doing the kind of solo characters. And apparently, with the rumored Black Panther game and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, Fantastic Four, that would make sense considering the movie now has a new date to kick off Marvel's Phase 6. And obviously, it might not be a direct tie-in, but if you get the game outside near the movie, that's a good little bit of cross-promotion there.
I have a question.
Go on.
Do you care about the Fantastic Four?
Well, the Fantastic Four movie tie-in
just as an entity
on the PlayStation 2.
Yes.
I used to go to church when I was little. My nan would make me go to church.
Me to church.
And I like pretended to be ill and woke up at 6 a.m. to play that game. And I don't regret it. It was like Marvel Ultimate Alliance. It was great. It was awesome. I don't really care about the Fantastic Four as a group, but I think they can be done well. And I would hope that they could be done well in video game form, especially because their powers are so different. And hopefully, if you can swap between the different characters, which you couldn't do in Guardians of the Galaxy for some reason, it'll make for interesting gameplay at the very least.
I do assume that a Fantastic Four game is just a bigger version of when you pick them all in Ultimate Alliance.
Yes.
Like you can already do a Fantastic Four game. It plays very well, like in all three of those Ultimate Alliance games. I don't care about the Fantastic Four. I do care about Amy Hennig. Like, if people don't know about her, obviously, massive contributor, writer of the Uncharted games, Legacy of Kain. If you love the Legacy of Kain writing, that was her. So that's what I would want to see from her, though, a new IP. I know I'm always harping on about new IPs.
Yeah.
But a new Amy Hennig IP from the ground up, not tied to an Uncharted sequel, a Star Wars sequel. Like, Forspoken should be that, but it's like five writers on that project, and it's clearly studioed to death, looking at that trailer that was doing the rounds last week.
Yeah.
That's not her writing that dialogue at all.
Do you think it's maybe indicative of where the industry is at right now that Amy Hennig has been trying to get a game off the ground for so long, and outside of Forspoken, her options have been kind of licensed games. Mm-hmm. It was Star Wars, now it's Marvel. Like, with this expo and with this kind of conference, we're going to be seeing like Disney essentially, you know, start properly staking their claim in the video game world. Yeah. We know there are big rumors about EA making two different Disney games as well. Mm-hmm. Like, is this going to be the reality for video game development almost as it is for movies where you've got an up-and-coming director and it's like, when are they going to make a Marvel movie? Because they're going to make one at some point. Is it the same way here where we've got new studios and we've got veteran writers coming in and it's like, which license are they going to work on? Is it going to be Lord of the Rings? Is it going to be Marvel? Is it going to be Star Wars?
That's a horrible reality.
It kind of is, isn't it? Like, it's going to be good in the short term for me because I love all those franchises, but if that's like a long-term setup for success, I think, kind of scary.
Yeah, I think it's at a certain level of scale. Like, I think you do the indie work and then that catches the eye of the big teams, the Marvel people, the Star Wars people, and they give one of their movies to you, like an Eternals or whatever with Chloe Zhao or something, and then you get the money and you can go off and do your own thing. It's kind of like the Nolan model, where it's like one for you, one for me, and maybe that's how it works, I guess. You get the money from the big projects.
The thing is, right, not to make this a movie podcast, but that approach has swallowed up so many people as well. Like, you know, what's Mark Webb done since the Amazing Spider-Man movies? What has, is it Gareth Evans or Edwards
who made
Rogue One? Sorry, no, he's called Gareth or Garth something.
He did Monsters.
It was like an indie movie, and then he did Star Wars Rogue One, and then had like...
Gareth Edwards had
such a promising start and then kind of like disappeared. Like all of these cool directors who were working on stuff and then kind of get stuck in the machine or then get forgotten about. Even Ryan Coogler, right? One of my favorite directors before Black Panther. I mean, I still love Black Panther, but you know, made Fruitvale Station, made Creed, made these great movies and then went into Marvel. And while Black Panther was really, really good and I'm really looking forward to Wakanda Forever, he's not done anything else outside
I wonder if
of
they
that.
Get like tied down by all the pre-production and post-production conversations. Like they come out of their big release. Okay, what we're going to lock you down for next. We're doing like initial storyboarding. We're doing all the ideas. Okay, let's get this down. And those projects, they take months, they take years for those conversations to happen. Like it can take forever.
Totally.
And then they get stuck in another pre-production thing for the next movie and they're just in that cycle. Yeah. I mentioned the Gareth Edwards, Gareth Evans split is funny because Gareth Evans is the Raid guy. I wanted to like shout out because I love the Raid movies.
Dude, I've made that mistake so many times in the lists and people have been like, you got the wrong dude. And I'm like, why do I keep making this mistake? It's because the Raid is so good.
I know, right? And their surnames are so close.
Yeah.
One shining example of dabbling a bit in the Hollywood system and then going off and carrying across the reputation is Rian Johnson and Knives Out. Knives Out is one of my favorite films and I despise The Last Jedi. But not for the direction necessarily, but like, Knives Out is phenomenal and he's like, that's way more him. And like, it feels like him. It feels like an auteur that came across and learned the lessons from dealing with a bigger budget and bigger casts and everything.
Oh, there's definitely like, you know, examples where it's worked. But you even look at like the Russo brothers, right?
Yeah.
They made, you know, the two Captain America movies and they made the two Avengers movies. All like great films, all incredibly successful. Obviously Endgame, you know, the second highest grossing movie ever made. Mm-hmm. And then they've kind of like used that success to make incredibly big budgeted movies like The Gray Man recently.
Cherry as well.
Cherry as well, but like who went to see Cherry, you know?
Honestly, dude, like the Gray Man is, I've said abysmal twice in this podcast, The Gray Man is horrible.
Right.
Horrible, like horrible. Like if an algorithm made a movie, like this is what the kids like, and you sort of dial it in, okay, action, you move the slider up. Terrible. Just what are you guys doing? Like, I don't know. Like, you can tell how much the Avengers stuff and their work in the MCU was just as much the Russo brothers as it was. Is it Steve McFeely or Chris
Christopher Marcus
and Stephen McFeely?
Yeah,
the writers.
I
think that's right. But you can tell that they were a squad. If you just take the Russos away, you get really flair direction and nothing else. Like, it just that, that Gray Man is terrible. Oh my God.
I almost watched it at the weekend and then watched El Camino, a Breaking Bad story instead.
Beautiful. Oh, you're jumping around the timeline. I'm going to finish Better Call Saul, do all of Breaking Bad, and then do El Camino.
Well, I mean, no spoilers, but El Camino is actually set before Better Call Saul's flash forwards.
I suppose it is. Yeah, I suppose it is. I'm gonna fill in all the Walter Whiteness
Speaking
and then
of,
get
my
to
friend,
Jesse's story.
Happy Better Call Saul finale day.
Yes, happy Better Call Saul finale day to everyone listening to this. The finale is out today, but dear God, social media keeps trying to ruin stuff. We've blocked so many terms until we can watch it. But yeah, Better Call Saul is coming to an end after 8 years or whatever it's been.
Yeah, man.
It's been a long time. Final news item of the day. We'll do this one quite quickly. We'll roll these together. You mentioned before that there are a couple of EA single single-player games coming. One was revealed by Jeff Grubb. That's an open-world Black Panther game coming from EA. Grubb said there was another single-player game that he'd heard was potentially coming together, and then Tom Henderson, who's just sort of a known leaker, does lots of Battlefield stuff, lots of Call of Duty stuff, said that they've heard it's an Iron Man game. Said to treat it as a rumor for now. They'll do a full report if more stuff comes together. But it is, in theory, an Iron Man game and a Black Panther game. Where were these games when the MCU was a thing?
It's a great point.
Phase 4's ending and no one even realized, mate.
That's a great point. And it's kind of, like I said, you know, kind of reflective of Disney's slow start. You know, think of the games they greenlit. Obviously, Spider-Man was a huge success. Mm. And then they kind of had the Avengers, which wasn't a huge success. Then they had Guardians of the Galaxy, which was inked at the same time as the Avengers deal. Mm-hmm. And then it only feels like now all of this stuff is kind of coming to fruition. Mm-hmm. And that might be because game development is just long and takes a lot of time to get developers working on games to get these deals licensed. But yeah, you're totally right. Like, mm-hmm. an Iron Man game now, while I'll still look forward to it, seems kind of lit.
Who cares?
It could have happened a decade ago. I do care, I must admit. But
I'm so jaded. I need to rein in just how much I don't care about like Marvel and Star Wars, because I don't know how much the average person is with me or with you. Like, is the average person still excited about the potential of these various, like, the brands are bigger than ever and there's more money at hand, kind of thing. And like those bets are bigger, and like, you know, if something pays off, then that's a much bigger deal, and we'll all be talking about thing. That for me hasn't happened since Endgame. We haven't all talked about some WandaVision we did, but like that's about it. And so like I'm just so jaded on how much it feels like a brand hyperextending itself that I just don't care about someone ticking a box that says video game. Like, you should have done that when everything was purposeful instead of just going like, well, we've got all this money, so I guess we'll do this now. And it's like, yeah, sure.
I'm kind of with you and kind of not, which is classic.
Standard.
because, you know, I agree, you know, my Marvel enjoyment isn't where it was around the time of Infinity War Endgame, but it also hasn't plummeted. It's kind of the same with Star Wars, where there's so much content out there between the movies, between the TV shows, between, you know, games or the spin-off media, that I kind of just, I get excited for the ones that I'm excited about. Right. I don't need to consume everything anymore. Like, for as good as Ms. Marvel, for as good as Hawkeye might be, it's kind of, that's not what I want to spend my time doing, but I will jump into WandaVision. I will jump into Shang-Chi, you know what I mean? I can pick and choose more than I used to, where, yeah, everything was an event and there was definitely a lot of merit to that. Mm. But also, I kind of like the ability to just kind of like take a step back and then only focus on the things that I am interested in, which would be a Black Panther game, which would be an Iron Man game, which would be a Fantastic Four made by any enemy.
Which is kind of like the video game or movie equivalent of how comics are, like as a medium. It's like you pick out the issues you want, you follow a couple of arcs, and then they wrap and you do something else. And like sometimes there's long form stuff, but they get rebooted after a few years anyway. So it kind of works in that regard. I don't know. I guess I'll see how things come together. It just feels like they missed their window. It's just sort of like, it was the same energy around the Black Widow movie, where it's like, I would have loved this if it was like 5 years ago.
Right.
But like, there's something about focusing on events that have already wrapped that I just, okay, sure.
Right.
Like, it just feels like whatever. But yeah, there's definitely, you talk about playing the Fantastic Four game that you liked when you were younger. I like the first Iron Man game on Xbox because it has a really cool mechanic. I didn't play it for that long, but I like the mechanic of you're redirecting power across the suit, whether like you do the chest blaster or the repulsors on your hands and stuff.
Yeah.
And I like that takes away from like, if you want to go full ball flight, you have to like redirect the systems. And I was like, make that a game mechanic, do it properly. Where it's like, you know, you save up, maybe on the harder difficulties, you're like rationing out your energy so you can blow the S out of some dude's chest. Because there's one enemy left or something. I just think there's something to do at the combat level that would be like core to how Iron Man functions that would really differentiate that game and not just give us another Souls game or whatever.
Yeah, make it a Souls-like is what I'm hearing from what you just said there. No.
You need to play The Surge, my friend. That is an Iron Man Souls-like.
While we're talking about recommendable Iron Man games, I will, before we sign off, recommend Iron Man VR, which I played a few years ago in lockdown. Mm-hmm. And that's like not the best VR game you'll ever play, but man, is it a power trip? Is it great to, you know, free fly around using the thrusters on your hands? Like, talk about like being Iron Man, you know, this game will make you feel like Spider-Man or whatever. Like, that is a, like, if you can get that, like, you know, if you have a VR system and you haven't played it, play it, because it's fun.
Also, speaking of superhero VR stuff, shout out to it's the second Spider-Man movie, Far From Home's VR experience, where they just give you a chunk of New York and you can just swing around. Like, brilliant. Why is that not everywhere?
What you're saying is all of these games, Iron Man, Black Panther, Fantastic Four, should all be compatible with PSVR 2.
Maybe superhero stuff is best in VR.
That could be true.
Maybe the only exceptions are Spider-Man and Batman.
I'll raise you. Maybe everything is best in VR.
I will not take that. I'll push that back down. But we should mention that for the main podcast, Mr. James Dowse is off this week. So me and you are going to do a breakdown of the best superhero games. I think of the last 10 years. We haven't got our parameters yet. But we've done rankings before. We've done best From Software games, best PlayStation games of the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Personal rankings, and then we'll reveal them and see if we overlap. So we thought we'd do the best superhero games, kind of in honor of all the Marvel, Disney stuff that's kicking off at the minute, and see how we land. But we haven't got parameters yet.
No.
But we'll do that for the main podcast, because Lord knows there's not much else going on.
I think that's going to be fun, because, you know, for as much as I really enjoyed the From Software ranking and the PlayStation exclusive ranking,
yes,
we would have a lot of overlap there. Mm. I think it's going to be the biggest disparity in our picks that we may ever have doing the rankings, the
Maybe.
Superhero one.
Because well, I know so you're going to put Ultimate Spider-Man above Spider-Man 2.
Spider-Man 2 might not even make it on
the list. It might not even make it on the list. So we're going to have to see. But yeah. But I'm already thinking of Marvel, the first Lego game, where I'm free roaming as Venom in a city.
That was pretty good.
I like that a lot. But yes, a massive thank you to everybody for listening to The Wind-Up. I forget how I go out of these things. It's been 4 days since we last worked. But I'm Scott Tilford. You're Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
That's the one. Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you. And we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.